Welcome to the We Hack Purple podcast, where each week we meet an interesting, exciting, and well-experienced new guest who is a member of the information security industry. This week, we're going to meet Ritu Gill. She's going to tell us all about open source intelligence gathering. We have not had anyone on the show yet with this really super cool job, so I'm very excited to talk to her. This week, we are sponsored by ThreadFix, powered by Denim Group, and I am your host, Tanya Janka. But you don't want to hear about me. I'm old news. I'm basically like furniture. Let's bring out Ritu. Hi.
Hi, Tanya.
Welcome to the show. Thank you for coming to the We Hack Purple podcast.
I'm excited to be here with you. This is kind of a first for me, so I'm excited about it and happy to see you.
Yeah, I'm happy to see you too. Could you tell our listeners and viewers, well, I mean, this is Ritu Gill, but could you tell us your job title and just a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, I can definitely do that. So you guys already know my name, Ritu Gill. My job title, I'm an open source intelligence analyst. And that sounds really loaded, but what that essentially is that we use open source information. So open source information is publicly available information to answer specific intelligence questions. And if you want me to break that down a little more, it's essentially finding and following those breadcrumbs that people leave behind online. In order for usually for a research or investigative purpose. And this could include things like risk assessments. It could include looking for missing people or people who are wanted for things like murder or other crimes as well.
Are you sort of like a digital detective?
I guess that, I like how you put that. I guess you could call it that. Yeah, I haven't heard that before, but yeah, I guess it does have the markings of getting online, and you know, I've heard different terminology, but I would say yes to that question. Web sleuth, there's different terminology out there that I've heard. I'm like, oh yeah, I just find things online, or I like connecting the dots. That's essentially what I like doing.
That's awesome. That's very cool. I bet you have helped solve a lot of cases that you're not allowed telling us anything about.
That is correct. No. Yeah, I definitely have to be aware of the sensitivities around some of the things I've worked on. But that is the exciting part too. I mean, when you do make those connections, and yeah, that's definitely one of the, you know, I guess, bonuses of doing this type of work. You feel like you've accomplished something, or you were able to help somebody out with their investigation.
Yeah, that's very cool. I have a friend, and sometimes if our other friends go on a date, she'll look the person up on Facebook and tell them if they're already dating someone or not. She's like, that guy's married and has six kids. Did you know that? She's like, oh, damn. And so that's not the same. It's not the same as what Ritu does. It's very different.
That's similar-ish though, because open source intelligence could be used in so many different ways. But that's a great example, Tanya. There's times when people use open source to, you know, say you hire someone to clean your house or babysit your children. You know, and we tell people like, yeah, go take a look, see who you're bringing into your home, who's going to be babysitting your children or cleaning the house, whatever it is, right? Those are things that open source can be used for as well.
Interesting. Okay. So I think a lot of people that are listening or watching are probably really curious about what is a day like in the life of an open source intelligence gatherer. So I know that you wear a cape and you're like, that's not true, Tanya.
Taking the cape off.
but what is it like what would a day be like? Or do you have to sit in meetings all day? Or
No, definitely not a ton of meetings. I mean, there are meetings, of course. That's normal part of doing business. But we're talking about the internet here. So there's so much that we have to sift through as analysts, as researchers doing OSINT, open source intelligence. And one of the things is it can be so overwhelming what we're looking at. And one of the number one things, and every day's like this when you're doing research like this, you want to avoid, and this is what I do, I try to avoid those pitfalls, things like falling, like rabbit holes kind of thing. And when I say rabbit holes, it just means when I've gone too far past my objective of the task. So stuff like that is really important because we can easily get lost in, you know, I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of people that end up lost on Instagram every evening and Facebook every evening, you know, checking out what their ex was doing or whatever. But the thing is, even with investigations, it's, you know, it's easy to end up somewhere where it's like, hey, this is not, there's no point in this right now. I've gone too far. I need to pull myself back out of that rabbit hole. So a day essentially for me, it could be exciting because you do get variety, but it would be getting, you know, bringing on, say, a new client. And the first thing I always do is I'm like, hey, what are you looking for? Like, what do you want to get out of this open source assessment? So I will ask them, what is the intelligence question, right? What are we trying to answer here? And then I set my workflow accordingly to that. Again, depending on what we're looking at, is it a person, is it a company, that all will determine where I'm going to look and what that assessment's going to look like at the end of it.
Have you ever you said sometimes you kind of like fall down a rabbit hole. Have you ever done that and then discovered a bunch of really cool things, or do you just go down the rabbit hole and you're like, oh, that was wasted time?
There's been many times where you do find useful things, right? I mean, without doing all the research, you have to, I just find like, we have to look everywhere to say that we've done a thorough job. So you can't just be like, hey, I'm just going to look at it like the in the box thinking. You have to kind of look outside of the box. When you do that, again, there's times where I'm like, hey, there was purpose in that, or that rabbit hole took me somewhere. But there's times when that rabbit hole where I'm like, ooh, okay. I'm like, you know what? Moving on now kind of thing. So I guess I could say it's worked both ways.
Okay. Fair enough. So what type of personality traits do you think someone needs to be good at open source intelligence gathering?
I would say, well, there's a lot. I think there's a few that come to mind. Critical thinking. So the ability to take basic information and turn it into intelligence is a big thing. Intelligence is also something that's not just picked up. Like it's not just sitting in someone's Facebook account. It's something that, and that's why we make a difference between open source information versus open source intelligence. So mm-hmm. I think having those critical thinking skills is really important. In order to add value to your products. Sorry.
Could you define intelligence? Like what you mean? Because people listening might think, oh, a smart person.
No.
That's not what you mean.
Yeah. We're smart people. No. That's not what we mean. So like when I talk about intelligence, I'm speaking from the perspective of investigation. So something that's going to allow you to take. So we have an investigation. I say write up a report using my open source research. Well, that intelligence I provide, I want to be able to take that investigation to the next step. So that's the kind of angle that I look at it from. That's what I mean when I talk about intelligence, especially when I'm talking about open source intelligence, right? So again, it's taking that information, but we're using analytical skills to make these assessments and, you know, produce a report or a profile on a person, a company, or whatever entity I'm working with, essentially, right? If that makes sense. I have another one, if I can keep going.
Yeah, no, keep going.
Another really thing, a really important, I think, trait is to be able to articulate, if that is, if I could call it a trait. So when I say articulate, being able to explain the work you've done is so important. Because at the end of the day, if I am working for someone, whether it's, you know, I take on a new task and I'm doing a risk assessment, I need to be able to walk my client, my customer, through all the findings. So you have to be really, you have to be able to articulate what you did. People that work in law enforcement really understand this as well, because when you get called to court, you have to be able to articulate what you did, how you did it, and explain it very thoroughly. Otherwise, it could backfire on you. So those are a couple of things that come to mind.
Cool. So what types of, hi everyone who's watching. So we're having more and more people view us. Thank you for coming. I'm Tanya. If you want to ask Ritu a question, you can in the chat. She's not here to spy on your ex for you, but she is going to talk about like what her job is like, how you can get a job like that, etc. But let's go back to Ritu. So what types of technical skills does someone need to get into the field of open source intelligence gathering?
So that's interesting. So I'm going to say right out front, like, I'm not a technical person. A lot of people get confused. Really? They think and everyone's understanding or definition of technical might be different too, right? When people ask me like, oh, you're super technical, I'm like, no, I'm not. I have a degree in criminology, right? So I'm just to lay out a little bit of my background, like I finished my degree in criminology. I don't have, you know, coding experience from way back growing up. I didn't do that in school. But I did grow up around computers, and that helped me understand the basics. So when it comes to being an open source analyst, I think you definitely have to be comfortable using a computer, being able to like research and stuff like that. That comfort is really important. But I always tell people, like, I'm like, you don't have to be technical, because I tell people, I'm like, I'm open to learning always. There's always so much to learn out there, but I'm like, I don't define myself as technical per se.
Okay. Oh, that's encouraging. Cause I find a lot of people will get scared away from a certain field because they're like, oh, I don't consider myself technical, so I don't think I can do it. And, so people who are interested in this can know that's okay. But also, I mean, I have to say that even if you're thinking, oh, maybe I'm intimidated, go try it anyway. If it interests you, you never know.
Yeah. And no, for sure. And there's a ton of people. I have a lot of OSINT friends per se. And the thing is, they do have those technical skills or background. And that's always helpful to do some of the more advanced OSINT. It's just for me, it's like, you know, you can be a beginner and you don't have to have technical experience. You can get there eventually. You can, you know, get to intermediate and be like, hey, I'm comfortable here. Or you could go advanced and start like writing your own scripts and stuff like that. I tend to just use other people's scripts and stuff like that if I need to do that type of work. But one of the things I just would like whoever is listening is don't allow that part of not having or not feeling like you have technical experience, dissuade you from pursuing a career in open source intelligence. It's a learnable skill.
Yeah. So actually that's where my next question is going. So what types of training did you take to get to there? Or is there even training that you can take?
Yeah. So it kind of goes to, so there's different, again, there's different levels, right? I'm going to talk about open source first. So there's a ton of open source courses out there for people to take. And of course, some places offer, you know, basic, intermediate, more advanced courses. You have to kind of choose depending on if you're just starting into it, which makes sense, right? So definitely open source courses help because it helps you understand, especially I'm just thinking of it from like being somebody completely new and trying to understand it. Not only you want to do your own research, but if you wanted to take a course, I would suggest taking like a OSINT 101, kind of like that beginner stage. So you're not overwhelmed either, right? But just to get your feet wet, that's one thing people can do. And I know there's a number of places that offer courses. For me, also, the thing is, I took courses in the beginning, but keeping in mind, I work for law enforcement, I work for the government. So that perspective, like I had, I got the in-house training as well. So that's a little different. But that being said, there's a lot of, there's also outside training that we relied on, right? And that's open to anyone. But you can get, once you start applying this in investigations is when you really start learning and connecting, figuring out in your own mind, like, hey, this is how it works. One other thing I just want to add, sorry, I'll stop talking. I talk a lot.
No, I want you to talk a lot. You're the guest. That's the point.
One thing I wanted to also mention is, so aside from taking open source courses to gather that understanding, there's also very useful to take analytical courses. So things that like an intelligence analyst would take, because those teach you analytical techniques, social network analysis. I could go on and on. Being aware of your biases, all the things that will help you essentially in your open source research.
Oh, that's so cool. We have a question from the chat. So okay. How do you find your clients, or do you kind of find them? Which I think is a joke on you finding things.
Oh, I get it. Okay. I didn't get that for a second. I was like, what? How do you find your clients? Well, for me, so I have my own private business and I'm involved. Well, I'm sure we'll get there at some point, but I'm involved in a lot of different things right now. So I usually, I don't reach out to people. Like I don't go find clients, you know, because again, I'm very selective with who I'm going to be doing work with and whatnot. And I have to be very aware of that. But I think there are, for the people who are seeking to look for like clients and stuff, there, you could definitely do that because you could open source them, right? Let's see who needs to get some open source value, right? For whatever they're working. That being said, for me, it's a little different, like I said. So I don't usually seek out clients. So I don't know if that answers the question appropriately, but for me.
How do they find you?
Oh, how do they find
me? Like if
someone
wanted to hire you.
It's pretty, yeah. So it's pretty easy to find me. If you Google my name, Ritu Gill OSINT, I think a bunch of my platforms might show up. So a lot of people contact me through LinkedIn or through Twitter. Those are different ways you can contact me. You'll see on my in my Twitter bio, you'll see my Proton mail. I get emails as well, and I'm open to receiving those. But typically, those are the different places that I make those connections.
Okay, so how often do you receive requests for you to spy on people that someone is dating or wants to date? And how annoying is it on a scale of 1 to 10?
How annoying. It's quite, yeah, that's quite high up there on the scale, Tanya. I do get that often, and I don't do work like that, so it's like a little bit of a conflict, and it's not the type of work I do, so yeah, it's just like, okay, I can't help you. I do get lots of emails like that, and I just can't deal with those, but it is frustrating. So it does get frustrating after a while. I'm like, I don't want those.
Are there people asking you to commit crimes? Because sometimes, very rarely, but once in a blue moon, people will write me and ask me if like what they're asking. I'm like, oh, that's a crime.
Oh, man.
No. Well, that's what I respond because I'm sassy like that, like, oh, doing that would be a crime. Are you asking me to commit a crime? And they're like, oh, no. Do you get that too?
Oh, man. I don't know if I've got that. I'm like, and there's times where I see emails that I'm like, okay, this is just a phishing email. I don't respond, right? So I'm like, okay. And many times, maybe it's those types of emails. I just don't have the time for those, but it's interesting. If it is like, you're like, oh my God, I know this person and they're asking me to do such and such. I don't typically get requests like that though. Or I haven't yet. Watch, after this podcast, all of a sudden I'm going to get all these emails.
Yeah, no, don't ask her that. She's not going to do work that will ever land her in jail. We have another question. Do you ever offer to cover bail? I don't think so, Kellen. That sounds like that's not her job.
Whoa, that's an interesting ask. I'm like, okay, I see the name on the screen. Am I going to have to open source that later?
No, he's just teasing. Okay, more serious questions. So let's say someone's very interested in this and they want to potentially pursue a career in open source intelligence gathering. What types of work experience should they try to get to lead up to that? Or should they apply right away? Or like, how could they kind of try to launch a plan with that as the end goal?
So the first part of that, again, like I always try to look at it from a couple of different perspectives, but overall, having research related experience really helps, right? But remember, you can obtain that from those who are still in school. You do a lot of research when you're finishing whatever you're taking. Like, I just remember, it's been a really long time since I graduated, but I remember doing a lot of research, and things were different back then, but that's fine. I remember one of the things that I wanted to do was, when I was in my third and my fourth years, is really where I got interested in like research. I was like, okay, this is neat. I remember they had a crime analyst. One of my profs had a crime analyst come in and talk to us. And that's where I kind of switched minds in terms of like, hey, this is kind of cool. Like, what is she doing? And that's where my interest came in. So research-related experience is really important. The second part is start exploring OSINT, like especially if you're looking for specifically to this field, start exploring what's out there. Start searching. Use your search engines and Google, in quotes, open source intelligence analyst and the area you live in. Just to see what they want as qualifications. Because every area will be different, right? Like I'm in Vancouver, we're in Canada here, right? But like other people may be in different areas. And that's one way to almost like, even if you don't meet the qualifications today, that's something you could work towards, especially when they list those qualifications. That's one thing I would do. And one other thing I could just suggest is also, before I started open source, one of the things, like I, even in the beginning and even now, I read a lot, like read, like read about OSINT, read about, and there's places, I'm sure we're going to cover that a little later, but like, there's places on the internet where you can read blogs and see how other people are using open source intelligence. Yeah. So those are really important because it sets your mind up for that type of, okay, that's how that works. And then connecting those dots. But definitely like research doesn't have to be related to like police work only. Like you don't have to be like, oh no, I have to go work for law enforcement. No, you don't. Like you can, the door's open for you to explore other options.
Where are the other options?
Did you say where or what?
What are the other options? So like, I kind of assumed that you would work for law enforcement or the military or something. And it never really occurred to me that there'd be lots of other places that would want intelligence as well. So are you allowed to give us examples?
I mean, like there's, so for me, because most of my entire career has been with the government, and it has been specifically with law enforcement. So that's where like my understanding, that's where my examples come from. That being said, I mean, for example, like you could work for an insurance company and be an open source analyst, because I know they use them, right? They use online researchers, whatever they call them, I don't know. But, and you know, like ours that we have regionally in our province, like is called one thing, but they must have some sort of investigators that check on people for fraud to make sure that the stories are lining up, looking at their social media to say like, hey, you said you broke your back in that accident, but you're like skydiving. So, you know, so again, like that's one example that just comes to mind. There's going to be a ton of government agencies that hire like, you know, the spy agencies and stuff. I'm sure they need open source people. But outside of that, you definitely have things like private companies will also be hiring, I'm assuming, right? I haven't pursued those exactly, so I don't know, but I know they're out there, right? PI firms, right? Private investigators is huge. And they also want people that are good at open source research, right? Of course, they're going to be doing a little more probably being a PI than what an open source analyst or a typical open source analyst would do. But a PI would also need to be really good, a really good researcher.
Interesting. So we're at the middle of the show where I am going to thank our podcast sponsor. Thank you, ThreadFix. They create the most stupendous vulnerability management system this side of the galaxy. Yes, ThreadFix. Thank you for sponsoring us. I also want to ask everyone to click the thumbs up if you're having fun. If you're listening to this later on or viewing this, give us a thumbs up, subscribe, and if you can, write us a podcast review. We really like those things here at We Hack Purple. Okay, but back to Ritu. So, does this type of work pay well? So some of us call this the cheese question because I often talk about like, so how much cheese can you buy when you go to the grocery store? But you don't have to answer in that. But is this like the type of role? So like from what I understand of doing all the different, like going through all the different interviews, being a security architect pays tons and being a journalist or working at a startup or starting your own startup pays really poorly. So
right.
Where are you on the scale? Is it the type of job that pays very well, or is it like pretty good in the middle for as far as IT jobs go? Are you doing better than help desk?
Yeah. Okay. So I want to go back to your cheese thing. I'm going to be like, hey, I can't have cheese because, you know, I'm lactose intolerant. So, but good question. I was like, oh, let's stick with that. Where's she going with this cheese question?
But maybe you could have vegan cheese or cheese made out of nuts.
Yeah.
Like cashew cheese.
Yeah, I'd probably do something like that. There's alternatives, right?
It's expensive.
So back to your question on a serious note. So again, I work for the government. Everybody knows government salary stuff is public information. If you know somebody's, I guess, whatever category, but so I believe I do get paid well, like for the work I do. So looking at it from two perspectives, right? There's that government perspective. As a government worker, you top out somewhere. We all top out somewhere, right? When you're a government employee, right? So that's something to keep in mind. But for those of you who are wondering also, like, because I have my own business, overall for me, like when I put the two together, I'm comfortable with what I make. But one thing that also that I have the ability to do is after a number of years with, work experience, I have 14 years in the Canadian government. I'm at a place where, you know, you get to a place where you have experience and you get to call the shots with it comes your own private company. You know, if I take on a contract and I'm like, I won't do it unless it's at a level that is worth it for me. Because, you know, that work-life balance is such a struggle too. So you really have to, you always have to make those choices. But all I'm trying to say is, I would say I do get paid well and I'm comfortable. That's what's working for me right now.
When I worked at the Canadian government, so I worked for them for 13.5 years. And very quickly, I went from CS level 1, 2 to 3 because I'd already worked in IT for quite a while. And so I was a CS3 for like over a decade. And at the 8-year mark, you hit the top. And then you just have nowhere to go. And they're like, oh, you can become a manager. And I tried it a few times. And I was like, you can have your money back and go to hell. Yeah. Managing people that you are not allowed to fire is hell.
Yeah, that's
there's
really
no
weird.
There's no like recourse for no. so many things. And
totally understand.
Yeah,
that.
So after 13.5 years of service, I was like, hey, guess what? I have to go because you have 18 more years planned for me with no promotion.
Yeah.
So I have way better things to do. Bye bye. Good luck with all that cloud transition you're going to do.
And honestly, and, I don't blame you for that at all. Like, because yeah. like I said, like government employees, you top out somewhere, but that's where private looks so appealing to some people because mm-hmm. it's where the, like for me, like to be honest, I'm like, that's where the money is. Right. But you know, everyone has
and
to
also,
make their choices.
Also the super cool projects, the super bleeding edge, cool tech, like yeah. government's a very safe place to work. They're
yes,
very risk resistant. And I'm like, I want to do DevSecOps.
They're like, no,
and they're just like, ah, Tanya's terrifying.
Yeah. They don't like to, yeah, no, I completely understand what you're saying. It's yeah. relatable.
So, if you are a disruptor, a startup is a better place for you.
Startups are great. But,
yeah, but also I don't make very much money. And that is okay right now because we're just starting. But that's cool. Okay, so I have more questions there about you.
Okay.
Are there a lot of opportunities? Because like, I see a lot of people really into it, just like social engineering. I see a lot of people really interested in it, but I'm like, how many jobs are there really in open source intelligence gathering?
So this kind of touches on what I mentioned before, I think, but it obviously matters probably if you are looking private or government, and then also looking at what country you live in, or, you know, all those factors, those will come in play when you're looking for that job. And I think there are a lot of people looking for OSINT jobs because they are fun. There's I haven't been doing it for all these years because it sucks. It's really cool. It's really fun. That's why I do it and I can't stop. But the things I would just remember that not all jobs are labeled open source analysts, even though you're doing that. Private firms will probably be pretty straight up, I think, in terms of what you're doing. But with government jobs, sometimes a job is called intelligence analyst and you could be doing open source, but you won't know that until you make contact with the person on the job board or whatever it is, to find out. But think the keywords to really search, like I mentioned before, intelligence analyst, crime analyst, open source intelligence analyst. And then looking at, you know, what they have to offer, right? Because a title is one thing and the government's a little strange when they do that, but like sometimes it's not right in the title, job title, because it is sometimes just because.
Technical specialist.
Yeah, I know. I'd be like, what does that
thing?
Yeah, you need to ask, you need to definitely reach out and ask the questions. I think that's the best way to do it. To really understand like, hey, does this job include any open source research stuff? One of the things I used to do is always look at, like, I would do those searches and I'd pull out even from places like the US. I'm like, I've never lived in the US, but I'm like, I want to see what an open source analyst in the US for those private firms or the government, like, what does it say they want? And then like I would take things away from those, right? And this is earlier on in my career where I was like, okay, I'm like, I don't want to do that, but I want to do that. And I kind of like pick and choose, but it just gives you a better idea. Also like what kind of companies are hiring and what kind of work you'll be doing.
Oh, cool. Do you feel like because of your work that you're very careful about what you put on the web?
Definitely. Yeah. I think there's that level of, your operational security, your OPSEC is really important, but like for me as well, like I am careful with what I post. When you're out there as much as people like we are, like I love talking OSINT, you know, but I don't want to put my house address online. You know, I don't want to take a photo in front of my home and be like, hey, this is where I live. And I think, you know, that's just the privacy and the security kind of concerns that people that do this type of work have to be aware of, right? And also, like, and just the fact that you mentioned that, I just want to bring up this point. Everyone that does this type of work is usually aware of that, because we're constantly finding those breadcrumbs that people have left behind, and using them for, you know, building up, you know, to figure out where that person lives, or, you know, geolocate them, whatever it is you're trying to accomplish. Looking at your threat model. So, you know, for some people, they don't need to worry about things as much as others, right? For me, it is important to mask some things. I don't need every section of my life to be that private, but there are parts that I do try to privatize a bit.
I think that's smart. If you, so like, I realize the average person that's listening to this podcast is a lot more aware than the general public, because it's a security related podcast. But if you were going to give like a couple, just like one or two tips for people to protect their own private information online, besides not taking a picture of you waving in front of your house, do you have any other like brief suggestions? I'm sure that you could literally write a book, but maybe like one or two that people don't think of.
I think, well, sometimes it's just basics too, but like putting, like if you use social media, use privacy settings, right? On your personal accounts, right? And some people are like, oh, why do I need to do that? Like, but putting on your privacy settings, just it's a little step that you have to take so that not just anyone can show up on your profile and grab those photos of you and God knows do what with those, right? The other thing is, one thing, this is just something to think about, but I will always say this, if like you should never post anything online. And this is how I ask myself before I post anything on Twitter, on the Instagrams or of the world, I will say, if this got leaked out to a larger audience, is that going to be a problem for Ritu Gill? And, you know, asking myself, like, is this something that will compromise me or make me look like whatever, a person that I'm not? I have to ask myself before I post that, because there's always going to be those data leaks and hacks and things that keep, breaches that keep happening. So when you are online, if that's one thing you can ask yourself prior to posting, that should, you know, that should keep you maybe kind of safe. That's kind of one of the techniques I use. I'm like, hey, if this got out, what does this say about me?
Yeah, I agree. I remember when the life, do you remember the Life Labs breach?
Yes, so I, like, do.
So Ritu and I both live in British Columbia and Canada. And I'd like to know, it's all Canadians in the house tonight. Even our sound engineer is Canadian and in Canada right now, but not in BC. But that said, lots of places across Canada all use this company called Life Labs to do tests for your health. So like a blood test to say if your iron is low or you need some B12 or whatever else could be wrong with your body. And I'm not a doctor, so I'm not very creative with that list. But it's spilled onto the internet. And I remember going in right before and I had to have a blood test for whatever. And they're like, hey, would you like to be able to get your results online? And I was like, hells no. Don't put my stuff anywhere near your damn internet. No. Oh, yeah. And so that didn't, and then like 3 months later, it's like, data breach, Life Labs, everything that's ever happened to you is on the internet.
I know. God, I remember that. I was like, oh no, that's not good at all. I'm like, that's really horrible, actually. Yeah, that's the thing, right? Breaches will happen, and we need to be careful with the type of stuff, services that we use online as well, right? Definitely. Interesting.
I agree 100%. Zaya, I have more questions for you.
Can I add one thing, though?
Oh, please add all the things.
Okay. I just want to add one other thing just to mention is, a lot of times, like, and this is just the other perspective of researchers, like OSINT researchers. Yeah, we rely on that. What do I call it? Soft target. I don't know if that's the word I'm looking for. But so essentially what I'm trying to say is if I'm looking for a subject and say, we'll just call him boyfriend. We're looking at the boyfriend. He's non-existent online or he's locked down because he's doing bad things. Often we can get a workaround by going to secondary targets like girlfriends or, you know, their significant others. So, you know, in your own circles, it's always important to let your spouses or your people know, your significant others or kids, parents, because those are how you end up making connections. It's that, weak link is what I was, not soft target. Yeah, weak link is what I was going to say. The weakest link will end up giving away your operational security, even if you're a bad guy or, you know. So it's just those things to think of, again, when you are using social media platforms.
I literally lecture this, yes.
Mm-hmm. You totally get it, Tanya.
Do not bring that listening device into my home.
Yeah.
I had a roommate come home with a Google Home. I'm like, you take that devil device down to your bedroom. That does not go in the shared space.
Yeah.
She's just like, Tanya, oh, yeah. Yeah, my parents have one. And when I visit them in Ontario, so not since the pandemic, I'll be like, okay, Google. And then it says something. And I'm like, shut up and stop listening. And they're like, stop talking down to the Google Home.
You know, they're giving those things out like for free for so long. And that's why everyone went and got it. And it was like people were like, they had like, they're like, I have one in every room. I'm like, okay. I'm like, I don't think that's a great, great idea. Maybe if you want to try it, because you're like, ooh, I got something free, but make sure you unplug it and you turn the off button on the bottom of the whole Google Home. Like if you don't unplug it and turn off the off button, I don't trust it. You know, it's not dead until it's like, you know, completely turned off and unplugged.
I'm with Ritu. Okay, so I have more questions that are actually on topic this time. So what do you like? So this is the super hard question, Ritu, get ready. What do you like the best and what do you like the least about your line of work?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Tough questions.
Super tough. I really like the diversity of the types of files I've been able to work on. So depending on, you know, like keeping it when you have that diverse, like you almost don't know, like you show up at work or you take on a new client and you're like, hey, what are we working on today? That can be quite exciting just to know that it's never like stagnant. It's always evolving. There's always something new. There's always something different and I'm always learning something new. And I love learning from other people as well. And that's why I love the OSINT community on Twitter, because that constant, like, you know, sometimes we go back and forth with like ideas and then we move it over into the DMs or, you know, email, but it's collaborating with other people. I love all that stuff. One other thing is I really like, and I already mentioned like connecting the dots, but I just like saying that because when a customer comes to me with, a customer will come to me with some information, right? A client will come to me. They're like, hey, I know this much about whatever it is, but there's always this big empty kind of bubble that they don't know about. And so when I do an assessment for them, open source assessment, and I find new information, that's where I get really excited. So, and that's where that I find that really, exciting part of the job. Yeah. Cause I'm like, yay, I did something and I want to help you. I want to help you accomplish something. So yeah, that's success for me.
And then what do you like the least?
Oh man. So, okay. Well, this one's pretty easy cause, it's an ongoing struggle at times. So when you're spending as much time as I do on the computer, not being able to turn off your brain is really difficult. And that's a serious like issue. Like, and I don't know if other people that do this, like I haven't talked to a ton of people about it, but it's so hard because I end up getting so wired. If I work too late, I get so wired that I can't go to bed. And then the next day it ruins my next day because I got to work that day too. So do you feel that too, Tanya?
Sometimes if I'm coding a lot, I dream in code. I'll dream about code and I'll dream the answers. When I used to code every day, I would wake up sometimes and I'd be like, I know the answer. And I'd come into work and fix the bug. And I used to have a boss that would actually give me like an hour bonus. I did it. And he'd be like, take an hour early. Good job. You're working in your sleep.
I know, exactly. That's so cool. Hey, if it works. I sometimes have ideas and I go to bed and I'm like, oh, I got to get out of bed and write it down. like that happens. Yeah. But one of the things, as much as I love my job, is again, like it is turning off and then knowing your like triggers, right? And stuff like that, that those are things that are important to be aware of and just risk factors in terms of like what is it going to keep you up? Like if you look at certain stuff, right? Because we know there's people out there that work like national security type of files, like that could be quite disturbing, right? So you don't want to look at that maybe before bedtime. But like generally, I just find like as soon as the mind's going because I'm working on something, the brain's going. Yeah. If it's past 8 o'clock and I plan on going to bed early that night, it's just not great. Yeah.
So someone was saying, but if you work late enough, you can log that for the next day. I don't know. I don't know if that's going to work out.
I know it doesn't balance out. I've tried it. Okay. I've worked in other time zones too, which is, always, mm-hmm. Yeah, kind of, that really messes you up too. Don't do it if you don't have to.
So a couple of times you've mentioned, oh, there's resources for that. Do you want to share some resources that you like? Yours first.
Oh, resources for?
Resources to learn about open source intelligence gathering.
Oh, yes, for sure. So one of the things I'm part of actually is a nonprofit called OSINT Curious. And I'm on the advisory board for that, but it's a place where people can go read about like all these really cool OSINT people, really super smart OSINT people. We do blogs, we do 10-minute videos, we do different live streams as well. So it's definitely a good place to, I guess, learn all sorts of levels of OSINT. So you're not going to only learn beginner. I'm going to say, there's things on there that other people have blogged about that I'm like, hey, that's advanced. I need to learn that better because I'm not good at that. But they blogged about it. So there's things like that. OSINT Curious is a big one, though, and I definitely recommend that. Do you want me to list off?
What about yours?
So, yeah, I was going to say. So my website, you can find me at osinttechniques.com. Again, I'm still reachable on Twitter. You could reach me on LinkedIn. I use several platforms, or you can just email me. And if you know, just hearing of me here, just mention that you're on the, you know, you heard me on the podcast. I like to know where people hear me from, just so I have an idea of like who I'm dealing with, or I'm like, okay, was this somebody that knows me? That type of stuff. So my company, like I do talks, I will do training. One thing I will be offering soon, it's coming soon. It is going to be, OSINT, my own OSINT, courses. So that's, yeah. So that's coming soon. I don't have an exact date, but that's something to look for. And it will be posted on all my socials. So you can look for it. I'm sure it'll be on the website and then on Twitter and all the places, but that's something new and exciting I've been working towards.
Oh, that's so awesome. Yes.
So it's fun. I'm excited. I'm like, been waiting, trying to get things to line up and, they're slowly lining up. So just, awesome. Wait for that announcement.
So there's a question from the chat that's excellent. Do you participate in OSINT CTFs like Trace Labs?
Yeah, so Trace Labs, I have participated in CTFs with Trace Labs. I've done it. I haven't done any recently. That was a while back when I did participate in a couple, in a few at least. I think I've done three. Those are pretty fun. That is a really good place where you can learn more about and have hands-on experience with like how OSINT would work. And Trace Labs is, they essentially, what they do is they, you, what you would be doing actually in the CTF, for those of you that don't know, would be like, they have real missing cases. They work with like local law enforcement, have these cases, and then they have these CTFs where people team up or individuals and they go find different things online that, that could help the police. Because at the end of the day, like police don't have a lot of resources when it comes to missing persons cases. And it's all, yeah, exactly. It's all about the cheese. So the thing is like what Trace Labs assists with that is they will run a CTF. You can show up, participate. And once they've, I guess they package whatever tips they get from the people that participated and pass those over to the investigative officers. And, oh, you know, sometimes it's successful, which is amazing, right? Just to get people off those missing persons lists.
That is awesome. I like how it's a learning experience. It's realistic, but also it actually helps. That's awesome. Cool. Yeah. Okay, so one last question and then we have to go. If you were going to give someone one piece of advice to try to get into this field, what would it be?
One piece of advice. Okay, that's really hard because it's just one. Does it have to be one?
I'm like, no, it can be more than one. It can be more than one. It's okay.
Okay, if somebody's new, I have already said this today, I think, but read about how OSINT is applied. And when I say that, Google, use advanced operators and Google, what is OSINT? How is OSINT used? Articles should populate that you could read and take a look at. I do have a section on my website. Can't remember. I'm like, do I have it up? It's called, if you're new to OSINT, I believe, or are you new to OSINT? Just a couple of resources, like articles to read or videos to watch. Just like I did one with, Micah from SANS, called Intro to OSINT, that is posted in that section. That's an example. Cause that shows you like, hey, in the beginning, what would you do? But definitely reading is really like, for me, that's how I started. And then I built on that and then I got a better understanding. So I would do that. And if you're not on Twitter, get on Twitter, search the hashtag OSINT. This is like that second part where you're going to see a lot of people sharing resources and blogs related to OSINT. So that's also something you could do.
Nice. That's awesome. Ritu, this has been so helpful. Thank you so much for coming on the We Hack Purple podcast and being my guest.
Thank you, Tanya, for having me. I'm delighted to be here.
Awesome. Let's wrap it up. Thank you, everyone, for coming. And it is time for us to go. Thank you for listening to the We Hack Purple podcast, where each week we meet an awesome human being like Ritu Gill, who teaches us all about what it's like to do their amazing job, in this case, open source intelligence gathering. And I don't know about you, but I actually learned quite a bit. The intelligence part is definitely not really what I understood it to be, so I think I understand it a lot better now thanks to her. Thank you, ThreadFix, for being our sponsor. And thank you all of you for coming back week after week. We have a few more episodes in this, well, we have like 3 more months episodes of this season. We have so many amazing guests coming up. I'm actually really excited about all of them. I mean, I did get to pick them, so there's that. But anyway, I'm Tanya Janka, I'm your host, and this Saturday, we are going to be live streaming chapter 3 of Alice and Bob Learn Application Security. It is about secure design. So you can meet me at youtube.com/shehackspurple for free. And a bunch of us are going to go over the chapter, what was in it, lessons from it, and then we're going to go over the questions at the end. I've invited a couple of expert guests, including Adam Shostak, Vandana Verma, Ray LeBlanc again. It's going to be an awesome party with lots of amazing people. We're also going to have Aaron Lord and me, being the nerd in the middle, asking lots of questions. And so please feel free to drop on by at 1 p.m. Pacific time. We're going to be there for 2 or 3 hours, depending upon how much we have to say. The more guests there are, the more there is to talk about. And I can't wait to see you there. Secure all the things with We Hack